Yo, good looks to Dreadsock.com for sponsoring this episode of Real Notes. Anyone who has curly or locked hair like me knows how sacred a good hair wrap is. A do-rag, a wave cap, a scarf, a bandana, a bonnet, you name it. Dreadsock goes a step beyond the average with silk-based head wraps that offer full protection and frizz control for curls from 2A to 4C. They're made of a blend of breathable materials to help retain hair's moisture and preserve hairstyles enough to ensure a few less trips to the salon, all held down with an elastic band strong enough to withstand even the most aggressive head trips. Whether you wear one to bed or wear one on the go, Dreadsock will have you looking fresh and full. Socks come in all sizes, from shorties for short hair and beginner twists to extra large for the longer locked folks out there. Look, y'all, I've been growing my locks for nearly 2 decades and have been a loyal Dreadsock customer for 15 years. So when I tell you these shits work, I'm dead ass. Plus, they're an independent, black-owned business that's worth the time and energy. So go to Dreadsock.com and use promo code CINEMASAI, that's CINEMASAI, for 10% off your first order. They won't fall off in your sleep, but they will keep you looking fresh. Thanks again to Dreadsock for sponsoring the episode. Now let's keep this shit moving. What's good, y'all? My name is Dylan Green, and this is Real Notes, a space dedicated to blurring the cultural and artistic lines between rap and film. I'm here to chop it up with everyone from rappers and producers to journalists and video directors about their relationship to movies and how, if at all, film inspires their craft. My guest this week is Brooklyn rapper, producer, singer, and multi-instrumentalist Cisco Swank. We spoke about meeting at Pitchfork Festival, Snowfall, RuPaul's Drag Race, Akira, The Incredibles, Inception, the magic of movie scores and soundtracks, what the piano means to him, the relationship between jazz, rap, and gospel, and the creative process behind his debut solo album, More Better. Come fuck with us. What's cracking? What's up, everybody? What's up? Welcome. Welcome back. Welcome back to my show, whose name I forgot. It's called Real Notes. That's what we're here to do. We're here to do that. I made the long trek from Brooklyn back to Long Island last night, so my brain's not all the way here. But I feel you. my name's Dylan Green, CINEMASAI. Got a lot of names, do a lot of shit. I'm around. I'm drinking a smoothie, and I don't know what this man's drinking in his cup right now, but he's got
It's a nice mug. I'm drinking some chamomile tea with some honey and lemon.
Nice. Yeah. Like base beverage, you know.
Like, you know, it's like a very classic. I've been trying to like not drink coffee and just like stuff. I'm trying to be like mad, you know, healthier when I can. But yeah, drinking some tea, chilling.
Hey, in Brooklyn. Hell yeah.
Yes, sir.
Man, this man's a fucking, like, yeah, talk about doing a lot of shit. Bro's a rapper, producer, multi-instrumentalist, a jazz head, fucking Brooklyn native. He never leaves the crib with his phone charged, apparently.
My phone is literally charging as we speak. It's on 20%. So I was like, dang, I should have charged it before this joint. But it just adds an extra layer of excitement to my life when my phone is not charged.
Right.
Am I going to make it? Maybe, maybe not. Like, we'll see.
You like to live dangerously, and that's fine. We got Cisco Swank here, who likes to live dangerously. More Better will be actually it's gonna be out as soon as you hear this. So go listen to More Better. It's out, it's great. This dude's dope. He's been dope for years. Thank you for being here, bro. Like, it means a lot.
You've literally had so many fire people on this, and I'm like very honored, truly. So thanks for having me.
Nah, man, it's my pleasure. You know, I don't remember when you and I first met, but it's been a little while.
We officially met at Pitchfork Festival last year.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That was such a breakneck weekend. I'm still remembering moments from Pitchfork that I like forgot about.
That whole thing was like insane. That was very insane. But that was a fun time. That was like my first time being at like a bigger music festival other than like Afropunk. That was super sick. Also like first time seeing Earl live, which was Amazing.
Oh shit, damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like with that album in particular, with Sick in particular, like that's such a that's like such an intimate album, but you're like surrounded by like 85 people. Not even 85 people, like 285 people, like just in a crowd type shit. Like that's such a crazy moment. Like
for sure. Yeah, it was amazing. That lineup was actually really fire. There were some sick people there.
Yeah. Especially that day. Like I was side stage for No Name that day.
Oh, fire.
That was I mean, like being side stage for a No Name show in Chicago is like, I don't know how you, I don't, I mean, like I'm she's about to play in Brooklyn at Mike's.
Free World. I'm also playing like, for that too.
Oh, are you crazy?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
That's
wow.
Gonna be hard.
I'm so excited about that. Damn. But I bring all that up to say that we've known each other for a little bit. I've known your music for a little longer than that. The evolution's been really beautiful. Yeah, of course. Like there's so much to talk about in terms of just like the relationship between jazz and rap and just like all your, you know, like all the things you've done over the course of the last like 4 or 5 years. But before we do that, let's talk about movies and bullshit. What's the last movie or TV show you watched that you had a strong opinion about?
Ooh, last movie or TV show I watched. Oh, I just saw Beef.
How'd you like it? I still haven't watched it.
I actually, that is one of like, I can say my favorite shows that I've ever seen. Low key. I'll put that on like top 5, top 10. Also, because my homie Yoshi told me to watch it. He's like, bro, it's sick. It's just like, it's a fire show. But yeah, the plot was just like every episode just got more and more interesting and like outlandish, even though it just started off like, all right, this is like normal day in the life, you know, two struggling people. But it was just like, what is going on? But yeah, it's definitely like a binge worthy show. The acting is really sick. It's fire.
Yeah, nah, I love both Steve Yeun and Ali Wong, and not that other guy who's on there that's a bad man. But I do it's been on my list. I just want to like not watch it officially. So I'm gonna go hop on the high seas and go find that at some point because I'm definitely I definitely want to watch it. It looks great and it looks like everything that like everyone I trust people I trust have told me it's great and I trust you and you told me it's great. So that's just another one. So like,
yeah, it's a sick show. Really enjoyed it, and it's pretty short too. Like it's like 10 episodes.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah,
they're all like an hour, I assume, something like that.
Yeah, they're like I can't remember, maybe like 40 something minutes into an hour. Yeah,
sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, bro. What about you? What was the last like show movie you saw? I know you like you literally do this, so you've probably seen mad shows, movies in the past recently.
We were talking about this off camera, but for anybody who's been not even a long time listener, but like I finally started Snowfall. It's good so far because like around the time the finale happened, I had like 4, 5, 6 guests in a row who were like, I've been watching Snowfall, and I'm just like, all right, like I've been meaning to tap in forever. And I was like, it's finally time. Let me just do it. I'm halfway through season 2 right now. I think I've been watching for like a week and a half, something like that. And you know, like it's really good. Like I get it. I get why people were so up on it. Franklin Saint's a horrible person, but he's an incredible character. Damson Idris put his whole ankle into doing everything he needs to do.
Whole ankle.
Yeah, fuck a foot. We're talking ankles over here.
You need the ankle
the one thing I wasn't expecting to be as crazy as it is like all the music, like all the fucking needle drops they do in there, just like all like all the classic R&B, classic fucking classic rap music, like early shit, like fucking you know, like I just didn't expect. I mean, it's a John Singleton production, and like he's still alive at this point and still very much like working on the show. So it makes sense that he would have a team of people who were like really on, like, we need this song in here. You know, like there's a scene at the beginning of season one where Franklin gets robbed and he gets his ass beat in front of his car to the tune of fucking Bill Withers' Lovely Day. And it's one, it's like hard. One of the, it's kind of crazy. Like just in the, like, I'll never listen to that song the same way again, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Cause it was that, cause like there's now two things I think about, or three things. Cause A, that song is, it's a perfect song. Nothing wrong with it.
Oh, you play it, amazing.
You play it at any moment and it's perfect. But like the other time I saw it in a movie or a TV show was, you ever see 127 Hours, the James Franco movie about the guy who gets his arm caught under the boulder?
No, that sounds wild.
Go watch it. It's pretty good. But so there's a scene in the movie of spoilers for this 10-year-old movie. There's a scene in the movie where bro realizes that he's not about to get up out this rock anytime soon, and he pees into his water bottle and like drinks the pee. and they do it where like they have the camera inside the bottle and you're like watching the liquid get sucked up through the straw, and it's just like Bill Withers' Lovely Day playing while this guy drinks his own piss. It's one of the craziest things I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen anything like it.
That's actually insane. And also I feel like that just fits perfectly, just like having a scene that's so outrageous and not a lovely day with a lovely day happening.
Right. It's
like mad fitting.
The
juxtaposition of that.
Right. I'm big on like musical irony and all that good shit. So that's like that really stuck out for me. And what else? Cause it's Snowfall. My partner and I have been watching hella fucking Drag Race the last 2 weeks. Cause I've watched Drag Race before, and I really enjoy it. I've been involved here and there in drag culture over the course of my life in various ways that maybe I'll get into another day. But you know, like, but like RuPaul is the most extra human being on planet Earth, and it makes. It just makes everything funny. I don't know. Like, I just love the art and dedication, and just like it requires so much work to be like good at drag, and just like watching people, cause like most reality shows are like, they're so focused on like the do the best you can within like this time frame. But on Drag Race, it's just like, take your time, make it look perfect. And it's never like, oh, like, we're going to laugh at you because you suck. Like, it's like, nah, like, you're here to give us your best every round. And yeah. I appreciate that, like, kindness and like that, like, let's let everyone look their best. But then again, it's also like, if you fuck up, it's on you. As opposed to like, oh, I only had 20 minutes. I only had 20 minutes to put on foundation. You know, like that, like that type of shit. But,
That's real.
I've never watched this much of it at one time, and it's just been a nice way to like turn my brain off and just, you know, watch the queens do their work.
That's facts.
I gotta look through my letterbox and see if I could find what was the last movie I saw. Oh, the last movie I watched was Akira. I watched was Akira.
Oh shoot, how was that?
It's amazing. It's the Akira is the movie that like it's not the movie that got me into anime, but because I had been watching like all like the basic shit from like when we were kids before that, so I was already into anime. But like Akira was when I was in high school, I saw it at my man Harry Field's house. Shout out to Harry if you're listening. We watched Akira one night and I was like, oh, like this is what, like, you know, like this isn't just like, it's not just like Dragon Ball Z. It really opened my mind to like the possibilities of not just what anime could be, but like what like animation in general could be. Cause like it's like this. You ever seen Akira before?
I haven't. No.
Go find it when you can.
Now I need to, like,
yeah,
I'm
bro.
Not interested.
It takes place in context, it takes place in the future. It actually takes place in 2019. Obviously, yeah, we're past 2019. I love it when movies do shit like that. But like, it takes place in Neo Tokyo. OG Tokyo was destroyed in an explosion that I don't want to spoil. And it's just about like it's about these two biker gangs that are kind of fighting for supremacy in the streets of Tokyo, and this like secret government organization that's like housing these like psychic old children. Like they're like literally like they got like Benjamin Button's syndrome or something. They're all like they're like little children, but like their faces are wrinkled and they got white hair. They call them Espers. And like they give them these drugs that unlock like psychic abilities, and one of the biker gang kids starts to develop the abilities on his own. It's one of the most beautifully animated things I've ever seen in my life. It's like they don't like I hate to say it like this, they don't make them like that anymore. They really, really, really don't. Like it's truly like you could just tell how much work went into rendering the detail on it. And I'm a big sci-fi person, so like, you know, there's been a sound from the movie that was trending on, it's been trending on TikTok for like a month, and I heard it enough that I was like, you know what, I think it's time to go back and watch Akira. It's been like 15 years, and it's timeless. I don't know what to say. Go watch it now.
Yeah, please. I'm literally about to do that. Like either today or tomorrow, I'm just gonna like take a little time, watch that joint.
If you wanna watch Japanese children maul each other to like industrial music, that's basically what Akira is. So go watch that. It's great.
Wild. All right, bet.
So Swank, for you, what's the first movie experience you can remember having? It could be at the theater, it could be at your cousin's house. Yeah. First thing that comes to mind,
The Incredibles.
Ooh, which actually good choice.
It says a lot because the soundtrack of The Incredibles is still today like some of my favorite music, even because it also just like put me on, like I was like 4 or 5 years old, just to like jazz music in general. I was just like, yo, this joint is like so fire, and it just like complimented, like I just love superheroes too. It just complimented like the whole movie in general. So I feel like I really also just mess with like really fire soundtracks with movies. Because like in middle school, I was just really into just like John Williams and like all these like movie composers. And that was more when I was just like playing a lot of classical piano and stuff.
Right.
But yeah, The Incredibles was it for me. I could definitely say.
Man, like I haven't thought about the soundtrack to The Incredibles in a hot ass minute. But yeah, like, so fire. It really is just like nothing but jazz. Like the whole, like the whole aesthetic of the movie is so like 1940s, 50s Art Deco anyway, and like the jazz music just fits in there perfectly. But I remember seeing the trailer and just like hearing like the horns and just and just like the sticks hitting the hi-hats, and I'm just like, this is so
fire.
Like, you know, like I didn't have the language to talk about it because I might have been. Incredibles was like what, like 03, 04?
Yeah, it might have been 04 or something, yeah.
Yeah, so I might have been like 11 or 12. Like, yeah. I didn't have like the language to describe it, but I was like, this sounds like super jazzy. And like, I had never really seen nothing like that, at least not in like not a modern context, because like, it's not, the movie's very like retro. Like, that's like the whole aesthetic, but like, I guess in like a modern context, in the sense of like a movie that came out in like 2003 or whatever year it was.
Yeah.
And just like the character designs and like everything about Frozone and Syndrome. Ooh, and like
Frozone is the goat.
He's incredible. Cute. Like the scene where the two of them are in the bank and he drinks the water and the cops are about to, she's like, I just need a glass of water.
Iconic.
Incredible.
Like iconic, like that movie just has so many like crazy iconic scenes. That just like I feel like built a lot of my personality, like as a little kid. Just like outlandish and just mad funny.
Right. What else can you think of that like really stuck to you from the movie? I'm curious.
Dang, what else stuck to me? Literally just like Dash in general. I just love Dash because I feel like I just wanted to be Dash when I was a little kid. Just like running around, just being mad outlandish, being like quick-witted. But yeah, like the every character just had like really cool just like development and was just mad like specific. And I just remember like liking that. And how everyone was just like mad interesting. And I kind of related to like my own family because I have a sister, an older sister, mom and dad. So I was just like, yeah, this feels like my life. Like I'm Dash and my family's the Incredibles, like which I thought was lit. And we all like play music because my parents are musicians. So it's like, yeah, we're like the modern day Black Incredibles. Low key.
That's beautiful. I love to hear that, especially since Frozone's like barely in the movie. Like his scenes are so memorable. But like I watched it again recently. He's barely in the
movie. He's not really in that joint. But he's more in. Was he more in Incredibles 2? I can't remember.
He was in it even less in the second one. Unfortunately, it is what it is. Like it's not like it doesn't make the movie bad. It's just a thing I noticed on. Now that I think about it, when I saw the second movie in theaters with with two of my friends, and beforehand there was this you know, sometimes like Pixar will put like shorts before their movies.
Yeah,
there is this one called Bao about like a lady who's
Is that the dumpling?
Yeah.
Yeah. I recently just saw that. I'm crying.
Yo.
Yeah,
bro. Dumpling boy. So you've seen it. So you remember how it ends with her like eating the little dumpling boy? And remember how like
I forgot how it ended. I only saw like the first two-thirds of it.
Okay. So I saw it in the theater before they played Incredibles 2. And obviously the theater's full of kids. Like it's just like kids and their parents type shit. So like it's like at the end when she raises the little dumpling boy up to be a teenager and then she eats him when he tries to leave the house. When I tell you that every single person gasped in that theater and you could hear it, like it was so like it's like nothing but little kids and it was so quiet when that happened. It's easily one of the scariest things I've ever seen in a movie. Like I was like, you're showing this to children right now. Like I never get like that, but I was like, damn, if I was in here with my kid, like I would like, like if I was a kid, that would have fucked me up. But like they were like low key traumatized, bro. I could tell. Like it was rough.
That happened. That is insane. Yo, Pixar be killing me. They just be having like it's mad wholesome. Then they'll just throw something in there and it's just like, oh wow, like y'all just did that.
Right, and then it's just like, oh yeah, enjoy Incredibles too. Like
yeah, now just right like, after watch this. Like. Sorry about that, but yeah, that's
funny. The Incredibles is like, not to dwell on it too long, but I'm thinking about it now. They originally weren't gonna make a sequel. Like Brad Bird, the director, was like super opposed to making a sequel for years, and then out of nowhere, they were like, he was like, okay, I guess it's time. It's just, but like considering the fact that the second one takes place like literally minutes after the end of the first one, it would have been so much cooler if they did it like 2 years after or like 3 years after, as opposed to like 10 right or however after. Long it was, like almost 20 damn near, because it came out like in the late 20s. I forget what year it came out, but
if they were like teenagers like Violet and Dash, that could have been really hard.
Like the second one was cool. But it's not as, to me, not as memorable.
It's
but
not I'm as also iconic. Like, yeah.
Right.
You're definitely facts.
I'm also like not a kid also. So
it's,
you know, maybe not exactly the primary audience. Yeah.
If we saw it when we were younger, we would have been like, oh, like this is crazy. You know?
Yeah. So like as you get older and you start to have more life experiences and you see more movies, was there a movie that kind of stopped you in your tracks in terms of like, not even so much an artful sense, but like just a movie that you watch and it's like a capital M movie. That's like something a little more than just like 90 minutes of entertainment.
Sheesh. That was probably Inception. When I saw Inception, I was just like, oh, wow. I remember just like the ending of Inception where it was just like the thing spinning and then it just stopped. And I was like, I remember just sitting there for like 5 minutes, like, what just happened? And then I went online, I was like, ending of Inception explained. And I was, which I feel like everyone does. And then I just went down a rabbit hole and I was like, bro, that was like insane. Just like on some like thought provoking, just not like, oh, I've just watched a comedy for 90 minutes. I feel like that was the one for me.
Right. Yeah. Like son, that was like a defining moment for that era of movie making. Cause I was in college when Inception came out and like everyone on my campus after they, like, we were all just talking about like, not even so much what does it mean, but just like the implications that came with, like, oh, like, is he dreaming? Is he not dreaming? Do we know? Does it matter? Nice. Like that was like the, that was like the thing at the time. I haven't seen Inception since, and I've heard from other people I know who've seen it recently that it didn't age super well, but I want to find out for myself at some point, because I have a very up and down relationship with Christopher Nolan. I like him a lot sometimes, and other times I just can't handle him at all.
That's real. Like
The Prestige is one of my favorite movies ever, but I really didn't like Tenet, like, I didn't at all.
Okay. Dang. Okay. That's real. I'm gonna need to check that out too. What didn't you like about it? It was just like slow.
Not even just slow. I like slow stuff. I'm the odd man out there. I love a good slow movie. It's just like, it's so caught up in itself and so like proud of what it's trying to do. And it's just like so dedicated to throwing you off that like parts of it just don't make sense. And it's sad because like the concept's crazy. The whole thing is about like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's just like, it's like reverse time travel in the sense where it's like, you know, like the whole idea is around like you win the fight by like having the whole thing go backwards and have like the bullet go back into the gun and like fucking like reverse fucking like war. It's like super cool conceptually. And like the scenes all, you know, like in like a technical sense, they all look cool. It's just like, he was trying so hard to shake people off that it just left a bad taste in my mouth. Like everything else about it is good, but just like the general idea of like, I'm gonna make something that's so confusing that you're gonna hate me after it's done. You know, like that's kind of how it felt to me. He's just trying so hard to like be, trying so hard to be like mysterious and trying so hard to be just like, oh, like you need to solve this. Like, bro, I just want to watch a movie about reverse time travel fights and car chases. Like, could you just give me that, literally, please? Like, come on, like
that deep. Like, just give the people what they want. Add a little bit of, you know, what was that? And then we'll be chilling. Like, I feel like it's the same way with music too. High key, I can't even lie.
Oh, absolutely. Like, that's
real. Yeah, which is a whole nother conversation. But, you know, it's facts.
Since we're here already, I mean, I know both your parents are musicians, so like music's kind of been in your life forever. But like, when did music become, you know, like in the same sense, like when did it become capital M music, as in like, oh, like this is music. What is this? You know, like,
yeah, I can't lie. I feel like that happened like really early. I feel like I might've been like 10 or 11 where I just told myself like, yo, I'm definitely about to do this for the rest of my life. Like I'm about to be a musician. But yeah, it was just like, growing up every day, just like musical instruments everywhere. My dad like producing stuff, my mom singing. So I definitely was just playing all the time since I was like 4 or 5. But I think like once I hit like 11 years old, I was like, yo, this is what it's about to be. I'm about to like make music. I feel like it might have been around that time where I started like also getting more into jazz too, where it's just like different sounds and things that were really like inspiring me. But yeah, I also remember, it was like a pivotal moment, like 10, 11, and also like the beginning of high school. When I saw a video of Corey Henry, this keyboardist, playing with Snarky Puppy. It was like their viral song in like 2013, 2014, where he played like one of the best piano solos of like all time. And that moment I was like, yeah, I just want to like, I know the piano, the keyboard is going to be like the vessel in which I create music. I feel like that was an important moment in time. I was like, yo, the keys is like the coolest instrument of all time. That's when I was like, yeah, this is what's going on. For sure.
Cause you'd been playing for like a grip at that point, right? Like you started mm-hmm. like really young.
Yeah, really young. It was mainly like piano and drums. And I feel like I was playing way more drums than piano up until like high school. Mm-hmm. And then high school was just like finding people like Corey Henry, Robert Glasper was a huge thing for me in high school. Like one of his songs from like his earlier trio records was like my alarm for the entirety of like my sophomore year. So I feel like his harmony and his cadences just like got like stamped into my brain in high school. And then also people like Herbie and Chick Corea and all these people. Just finding out new things every day, which was like a very big like discovery point for me, like early high school. It was a good time. Like I was just like learning a lot.
Those years are so special because of that, you know, just like kind of like discovering, you know, like at least when it comes to like the whole discovery aspect of like stuff you like and, you know, like who's just like who kind of becomes formative for you, especially as you get older, you know, like my, I'm like you, my dad is a musician. He used to sing and he used to roller skate he still sings and roller skates, but like he used to like do it like professionally. And, you know, like it's funny cause like he put me on to Herbie Hancock and that's how I first heard Headhunters, which is still one of my favorite things ever in life. And then I had people like when I went to college, I knew people in the music conservatory and they put me on to like Corey Henry and Chick Corea. And you know, I played when I was younger, I also played keys, didn't keep at it. Cause I'm stupid.
Yeah, that's real. it's like a hard thing. Keys is just like a challenging instrument. Unless you're like really playing, I find that like a lot of people just give it up because it's just like, which it is stressful. But I feel like playing at a young age, just like songs I wanted to play and that I really liked, just made me more interested. Like when I would play a song that I like on the keys, it would just make me like hype to keep playing. Yeah.
That's exactly it. Cause I'd be playing like more classical stuff, you know, like standards and all that shit in my lessons. And I would never practice. Like I just wouldn't do it. But the times that I felt the most compelled to go play the piano was when I was trying to figure out songs I loved at the time. Two that I'll never forget that I learned how to play were, Happy by NERD from Seeing Sounds. I don't know. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah, I'm not hip. I don't think so.
Go listen to Seeing Sounds. It's my favorite NERD album. It's I think the third one. It's the one with the gorilla on the front, the red gorilla on the front. But I learned how to play Happy by NERD. There was another one that I was gassed when I learned how to play it.
Yeah.
But there was this beautiful song from, speaking of soundtracks, remember that Beowulf movie that came out that was like that was like motion capture animation?
I think so.
I
don't remember what it was called.
There was this gorgeous song in it. The movie was just called Beowulf. But there was this gorgeous song in it called A Hero Comes Home that I heard, and it's literally just like the most beautiful somber chord one of the most beautiful somber just songs. It's so simple. It's like it's like a little fucking like 8-measure thing. I could play it right now. I can like see the keys in my head. But like I was always more excited. I was always more excited to play stuff that like I had heard that I really enjoyed and just wanted to figure out, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's always what got me about it. And that goes double for like I played piano, I played bass, I played djembe, and I sang. And like whenever it came to all of that stuff, I was always, you know, like I would, you know, like I would know the stuff that I needed to know, but I was always the most engaged when like, you know, like with I'm like with bass, I taught myself how to play this Les Claypool song, I don't remember how long it took me, but I was more excited to do that, and like this one of the first songs my teacher taught me was it was Falling by the whitest band alive, the Whitest Boy Alive. Like just I'll send it to you later. It's such a beautiful bass line. I'm talking too much, but I get it.
That's it. Now we can go. Yeah, we could talk about this forever. I feel like just like fire piano things. What's that fire one? From Spirited Away, like the main thing. That is the most beautiful piano melody. I can't really sing it right now, but yeah, that's like stuff like that. It's just like, bro, that makes me just say piano is the most beautiful instrument for sure of all time.
Piano and bass, like anytime I hear anytime I hear beautiful chords or just like a really just like tight bass line, I'm just like, damn, why did I give that shit up? I gotta get back at it right now, you know? Like
facts.
I get so inspired every time I hear like them two in particular. Like there's something special about those two to me.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
And since we kind of touched on soundtracks, before we move on to more about you, talk to me a little more about like film soundtracks and how like was there ever a period of time where you kind of, well, no, I actually don't need to ask that this time because film and music intersect for you is soundtracks. So like talk to me more about some of your favorite soundtracks from when you were growing up, especially.
Jeez, literally just like all the classics, obviously like Star Wars, like that was just the main one. I was just like, yo, this is because I my dad started me like playing classical music pretty young too. So I was just playing like Beethoven and Bach and all this stuff. So I really already enjoyed like classical, like Baroque style music. But the way like John Williams just added more like Americana sounding type stuff into classical music, just like nice chords and like key changes and stuff, that stuff was just like amazing. Like Superman, that joint too. All these like, yeah, George Lucas, you know, forget if he did like Indiana Jones, but yeah, there's a lot. E.T. even is like so good.
And it's so simple too, you know, like the E.T. one in particular is like, it's just such a simple melody, but just like the way, just like taking a simple melody and just building so much around that to really flesh it out. Like,
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it was a whole lot of that. Just like beautiful, simple melodies and just like amazing chords around it. And a lot of like the Disney soundtracks too. I might butcher his name, but like Michael Giacchino. I forget his name.
Giacchino. Yeah, he's tight.
Giacchino, okay.
He's great.
Because he did, like, Up, and he did, yeah, Incredibles, Up, Ratatouille, like, all these, like, fire soundtracks. So I feel like those were a lot of the joints that kind of got me, like, from classical to more of, like, movie jazz, and then more, after that, more into, like, jazz. So yeah, I feel like all those were just mad important for me. Just like bumping those soundtracks. Yeah.
Right. There were speaking of like the transition from like classical and all that fun shit to jazz and everything else, like there's two that always stick out for me. One is the first time you ever see Mo' Better Blues. I'm sure you've seen Mo' Better Blues before.
I actually haven't. I've seen Mad Clips, which is insane. I've never seen that.
Wow. Go fix
which
that.
Which is funny because it's called Mo' Better.
Yeah.
Which is like, geez. Yeah. Like, I'm gonna definitely watch that joint.
Yeah, nah, because one of the Marsalises, I forget whether it's Branford or his son. I think it might be his son. They got he wrote a couple of the songs. Beautiful, beautiful soundtrack. It's all about
Branford Marsalis, I think. His brother.
I think.
Probably was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure. But the soundtrack for that was gorgeous. And I was on a Spike Lee kick for a period of time because my dad had all the DVDs. So I watched that and that's one that really stuck to me. And then the soundtrack for Tron Legacy, what Daft Punk did with that, just like the
facts.
I've always been super interested in the mix of like just like acoustic, analog, and digital, you know, like they just like the way they took their synth shit and mashed and just like meshed it up with all like the classical elements is just, it's still one of the coolest things I've ever heard. Like it sounds so good. Like, and the movie is not that good, but like the visuals and the soundtrack do so much heavy lifting, bro. Like it's word. like that was one of the things that proved to me, like the magic of music to amplify a movie. Like, Cause that movie is mid, but it sounds and looks amazing. Like,
fire. Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah, nah, I'm a huge Daft Punk fan too. So like, it was, I already was at that point. So like, seeing them do that was, and just like seeing how they did the score up was just like, it was. I don't want to call it life changing, but it was definitely a moment that I think back on a lot. Like, damn, like that's when I really. That was one of the times when I was older that I really started to pay attention. Like there's others, but like that's one that's always, it just comes to me so easily, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I gotta watch that joint, like the original. I think I saw the new Tron, but I never saw like the OG one.
Oh, from the '80s. Yeah. It's from the '80s.
Yeah. It's good. Fire.
It's good. I haven't seen it in years, but I like it more than the new one. Like the soundtrack's not as good, but it's like,
yeah,
it is what it is. I like it. I like it all. So you know, like, so like from the time, so you started playing music really, really young, and you said that you really started to see it as like, this is what I want to do. Around high school,
yeah,
you know, and exactly. I know you went to LaGuardia High School. Mm-hmm. And did Joey Badass go to LaGuardia High School?
He went to Murrow, is in Brooklyn. My dad went to Murrow too. Yeah, so it's like a classic Brooklyn school.
Right.
A lot of fire heads went there. Yeah, like a lot of most of Pro Era. I think went to Murrow. So it's just like around there, just like Flatbush Midwood area of Brooklyn. There's just like a lot of like with the Flatbush Zombies too and Underachievers, Pro Era. Kind of all in like where I kind of grew up at, which was really sick. Just seeing like them go crazy, even though I was really young when they like first started. Taking off, but yeah, it's fire seeing people from like your hood just make really crazy music. But yeah, Joey's the GOAT.
Yeah, for sure. that shit is so special. And then from there, and then from there, you went to Berklee, Boston.
Yeah,
and you did, I mean, like I don't need to say much. It's fucking Berklee, but like, facts. You know, when did you start putting music together on your own that you, not even so much that you're proud of, like that's such a weird, thought. Why did I even think that? But no, like
that you're really just like, oh, this is my music type.
Yeah. Like, yeah. When did you start like uploading shit that you were proud of? Yeah, let's just go there.
I feel like, yeah, that's facts. Yeah, I feel like that started like really late high school. That might have been like junior or senior year of high school, just making stuff with like my homies who I still make music with today, like Elijah and Yoshi, and all the dudes. We had like a rap group in high school. I mean, we were just uploading like foolishness onto SoundCloud. But yeah, it was, I feel like that was definitely a cool time, like senior year of high school. And then once I hit college is when I really like started producing my own music. I feel like that's when it was just like every day, just kind of try to make a beat. And then like 2018, which is my first year of college, dropped like my first song on Spotify or whatever, called Could Have Been, which is just like a 7-minute, 6-minute song, just like going all over the place. But yeah, I feel like that was the moment where I was very proud. Like, yeah, I was very proud of that creation. Just like, oh, I produced this, I mixed it, I mastered it, you know, all this stuff.
Right. And, you know, like not too long after that, maybe like a couple years after that. So I guess while you're still in school, you put out Pursuit Of.
Yeah, that was like during COVID. Yeah,
it was during COVID.
Yeah, so we were just like on Zoom and I just had more free time. So me and the homie were just like making beats, making songs. And they were like, yeah, we got enough to just make a little project, like an EP, me and Tobias. So yeah, it just kind of came about really organically, which is cool. It was just like we transferring every day.
Yeah.
Same thing with like Luke and Some Things Take Time. It was kind of like around slightly after. But yeah, that was a lot of like the COVID songs, COVID music, I feel like.
Right. I'm happy you brought up Some Things Take Time too, because I noticed, or like the first thing I noticed about those two projects is that like they're like heavily collaborative. I mean, like not to say that More Better isn't heavily collaborative, but like just like in the sense that like it's basically built to the other person working on it. And I for some reason I didn't think about how much of that, I didn't think about the fact that it was happening during COVID. So like I guess just like what I mean like obviously like you know like collaboration just felt like, I feel like people just felt more willing to experiment with shit during the pandemic. So like what was it like putting those two projects together like during the height of the pandemic when everyone's still trying to figure out exactly how to do this shit?
Dude, I feel like it worked to our benefit actually, just having more time at home and just being able to like sit with things. Like if Luke would send me drums, I could just like sit with it for like however long, just mess with it and then send it back. I feel like it was just like no time restraint on anything, which made it like work really well and just really authentic. And also a lot of those songs, like they came about in like the first song that me and Luke made, which was Nothing's Changed with Saba. He literally he sent me like a drum pack of like 60 drum loops, 60, 70 drum loops. And then like one of the first ones I heard, I just played it. I heard it like 5 seconds of it, ran to the living room, literally recorded keys on it in like 10 minutes, sent it back to him. And then he was like, bro, like this is crazy. I'm about to send it to Saba. And then like 2 days later, he just freestyles over it. So like that song was made like most of the songs in like a matter of two, which is kind of insane.
How did y'all get in touch with Saba to make that happen? Like that's like, you know, like for that, you know, like for that to be like your first album and just like, cause you're like Saba wasn't as big then as he is now, but just like, that's not nothing, son. Like
literally. Yeah. It's crazy because Luke kind of just grew up in Chicago with all like the Chicago goats and legends, like No Name and Saba and Felix, all these people. So they kind of like already were homies before then, just on some like Chicago musician type stuff, which is really fortunate because it was just like Luke was the Chicago kind of scene and I was more of like the New York jazz scene. So we kind of just like merged all of that together. So it was sick. He literally just texted him just on some homie stuff, like, yo, if you mess with this, just see what you think. And he was like, yo, this is fire. Just rapped over it. Which is also cool because that album is just like all the friends and homies who are just down to make cool music. It's less like business type. I feel like less like industry business type stuff, which is why I feel like that project is so special. Because it was just like, you know, just did it with the homies, did it with the friends. Which is really sick.
Right. You really can't ask for, more than just like that organic, intimate connection. And like, honestly, that's what I love so much about Pursuit Of, you know, like, you know, like, listening to like Burbank and like Burbank, Washington and Harlem were like the three ones that I was stuck on when listening to all of these. And like, I'm about to ask you the corniest fucking question. Are those songs named that because of the feeling that they gave you, or like, were they based on the cities, or did it just happen that way?
It's funny because actually every beat I think was named after just a city that Tobias made. Like another one was just like LA Rain or something. And then another one was like, I forget the name, but yeah, he was just like randomly sending me beats and some of them were just named after cities and some of them I kept like Burbank and Washington and others. I like changed it, but I feel like he was just like, oh, let me just name it real quick. Thought of the first city he could think of.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool because like now I'm thinking like, oh, a lot of these like songs kind of feel like I'm there in a way. Just from like listening. But yeah, you can, it could be as deep as you want it, or it could just be like, he just named it. Like, he just named it a random city. I am trying to do that though. I'm trying to make like a project just named after like neighborhoods in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I feel like that would be like a sick, like beat tape name or like a concept. Just like, oh, Crown Heights, Flatbush, Bed-Stuy, something like that. I feel like, that would be hard.
Yeah, no, that could be cool as hell. Have you been to those three cities? Have you been, or I mean, obviously you've been to Harlem, but like,
I've been to Burbank. I remember just playing basketball in Burbank like last year, which was sick. I've been to Washington. I haven't been to like the state Washington, but I've been to Washington D.C. I've been a couple places. Hopefully soon we'll be everywhere and we'll see we'll tour Antarctica and Siberia and places, you know.
Y'all gotta go to Reykjavik and go play Iceland. Like
I'm down to go to like the crevices of the world and just be playing like the most out music. I feel like that'd be mad fun.
Yeah, I love that. You know, like especially since I mean, like the pandemic's not over yet, but like we're definitely we're safer. I can't even say we're safer. Things are just a little bit better now, and we can like move around, and we at least know what's out there in a way we didn't 3 years ago. So before we move on to more better, like, you know, like looking, you know, like especially considering how those two projects came together. Like, how does it feel looking back on them, you know, like considering the constraints you were under and like, you know, what was it like making those versus making a project like More Better, where like things are a little freer and looser and you can like be around people in a more direct capacity type shit?
Yeah, I feel like each like environment and like working space for each project just served the album as like it was. I feel like it was good that we made Pursuit Of in the crib, and some did take times like mostly in the crib and some we did in person. I feel like it just like speaks to the tone of the album. And like, I feel like everything is just like, it happens for a reason. More Better is just more like a blossoming, I feel like, feeling of an album. And you can kind of hear that in like, you know, just like more collaborations and stuff. And it just feels like moving outwards, I feel like. So yeah, I feel like it was good that it happened the way it did. That we were in the crib and just like sending things back and forth. Yeah, and I feel like a lot of More Better was too, just like in the crib too, like some of those songs I made in 2019, 2022. So just like a little bit of both. I feel like More Better is just like taking pieces from every project, just like each project was like a stepping stone, I feel like.
Right.
And More Better is just like reach the top of the mountain, low key. Or at least I can see the top of the mountain for More Better. Yeah, kind of like that.
Right. Which songs did you? What are some of the oldest songs on More Better? Like which ones did you create around 2019, 2020, and which ones kind of sprung
like more recently?
Yeah.
Yeah, Home is definitely the oldest one. I wrote that like in 2016 in high school, but it just keeps evolving, I feel like. So I feel like Home is an old one. The joint with Malaya and Morgan called Until made that like 2020, in right in the middle of COVID. Let me see some other ones. There's some newer ones that are like Over Now, the second to last joint. I made that in like January. I literally like just made that joint. yeah, so I feel like it's just like bouncing around, which is kind of cool, just bouncing around like the different time periods of me like creating and making music. Yeah, and Still Trying was like 2021. I was just in my bag. That was just a song where I was just like, just like, geez. Which I felt like it was a fitting end to like the project too. But yeah, it's a lot of like bouncing in and out of like time periods, I feel like, of my creation. Even like the second part of the Reprise with Luke, that was my final for my production class at Berkeley.
No shit, that's crazy.
I literally just took my like final where the theme for that for my final was like, I gave everyone paintings of like Basquiat pictures.
Yeah.
And I was like, everyone should just improvise what they feel when they see the painting. And then we just like played free for like 15 minutes. And I just took like a portion of that.
That's so loose. I love that. That's so great.
Yeah. It was pretty sick. It came out like really cool. And then I was like, dang, this would be cool to like put on this album because it sounds great. So yeah, there's just like little snippets and tidbits, I feel like, just from everywhere in my musical journey from the past like 5 or so years, which I feel like is really cool, just a culminating thing.
I love a good culmination, you know. I was just speaking to Cleo Reed last week about something that y'all will see later. It's completely different from anything else I'm doing right now. But she mentioned that Root Cause, her project, kind of came together in a similar way. She like made it over the course of her time at school, and she would just like be in places and just like jot an idea down and then record it, and just like, you know, like the two of y'all in particular. Or, you know, like you're both rappers and singers and producers and multi-instrumentalists, and just like the way that y'all, you know, like people like y'all always see the world different because you have that knowledge of every side of this shit in a way that other people don't, which isn't a bad thing. It's just like a different perspective. And it's just one of the things that makes your music really really engaging in that way. And another thing I noticed, you know, like compared to your first two projects and More Better, is like you know, like a lot of the music on those first two projects really do feel like it really does feel like straight ahead beat music made with like live instruments and like jazz and like interpolations and shit like that. And then you listen to More Better and there's way more just like straight ahead jazz on it, you know, like stuff that you know, like stuff that you might hear on a Robert Glasper album or on like a Chick Corea project, you know, like stuff that's definitely not blurring the lines as much. Obviously, there's still stuff that's like, you know, you'll go from a song that sounds that's like a whole suite. And then you just go to something that's just like you rapping over like a beat and then it's back to it again. And then there's something that's like a little mix of both. But like, you know, you really. Yeah, like I feel like you really leaned more into like this is me as like a performer, like this is me doing something more traditional, but I can still do the other shit, but I could do this too, you know, like you're like really showing, you know, like there's less not to say that there's more of a divide between the two, but it's just like this is that, here's a blend, this is that, here's a blend.
Yeah,
and I like that. Was that intentional? Like, did you go in wanting to do that or did it just come out this way?
Yeah, some of it was definitely intentional. Kind of just on some like, yo, this is, I am able to like make music that sounds like this and sounds like that. Other was just like, just try to make music how I felt it should sound in that moment in time. Like, yeah, I was just like trying to find a lot of inspiration from, you know, I guess just all my favorite records. And what they did and how they like blended sounds and genres and things. I mean, the most important one being like probably To Pimp a Butterfly.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
And just like how, and literally because like Kendrick worked with all the best jazz musicians of the generation, like Robert Glasper, you know, all these
Terrace
heads.
Martin.
Martin, you know, Sput. Kamasi Washington, literally like every amazing musician of like the generation above me or like a generation and a half, whatever. So I was like, yeah, let me try and like just make something like that feels like that, but just more like me and more just like Brooklyn and more young and more just like,
yeah,
can like relate to people who I just hang out with on a regular basis. Like, I really, yeah, I feel like that's a move. Just making something relatable that people were just like, oh, I, like, understand what he's doing. And then some stuff sounds a little foreign. So it's just, like, a little bit of, like, oh, that's fire. But then the gears are kind of turning a little more than usual. Right. I feel like that's always, like, a move, just musically, that I try to, like, get across.
Yeah, definitely. I could tell because, you know, like, obviously this project doesn't sound like a dissertation or anything like that. Like, this isn't like this isn't like boring or anything like that. But, you know, but you know, like, I feel like in general, not everybody. And I feel like people are less like this now, but there's still kind of like a general consensus that, like, you know, like there's the whole like, oh, you're however old, it's time for jazz. You know, like there's still kind of that like cloud hanging over the whole genre for a certain type of person, you know, but like obviously there's so many artists who, you know, like not just you or people like Cleo or people like Terrace Martin or shit. I didn't spill anything just now, did I?
Oh no.
A little bit. Sorry, my fault. I spilled like a tiny bit of smoothie on the floor. I'll get it later. But, but you know, like just like the idea of something like To Pimp a Butterfly that managed to like bridge the gap between jazz and rap for like a whole generation of people. Like there are people I still talk to today who like didn't, not that they didn't realize, but like they needed something that was like relatable, you know? And like, that's like an extremely relatable album in almost every possible way, you know? Yeah. But like, it's a, And you know, like your music just feels so, it feels so loose and so relaxed, like a lot of the best jazz does. And it feels lived in, you know, like there's, you know, like there's like atmosphere and personality and like geography and like just like presence in your music that makes it like, you know, it's not it, you know, like it's not just like notes flying around. It's like there's smells and tastes and like just like sensation that comes from that music, you know, and like, and you're like, especially when you're on your rap shit, which like, I know obviously you're a huge fan of Mike and Navy Blue. Like, I mean, like everybody is at this point.
Oh, for sure.
But like, you know, all like, those heads. You know, like that's just like, you know, like that's like also like been your style, you know, like that's, this is the type of shit you've been on. And, you know, like there's really no, there's like no better moment than now to like fully embrace that, you know, like it's honestly been beautiful to see how many people have taken that particular, like, you know, like self-improvement fucking, like, I'm gonna work on my better self. Let me just be raw as shit over some fire instrumentals type shit. And just like, you know, like it's like, it very much feels like you, like this is Cisco Swank to me.
And I feel like me in like my truest form, basically. And definitely, yeah, what you said about just like feeling lived in, like the music, like a lot of this music, like I came up with or just like heard and wrote just like walking or biking around Brooklyn or New York. And I feel like it just feel like you listen to the music and you understand where it's coming from and just like the places and feelings and things. So yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks though.
Yeah.
Just trying to make like really authentic, you know, just wanted to feel like you're here, like you've been where I've been, you know, you've been on the train at like 3 a.m. like, you know, it's just feelings like that. And I really try and like translate that also just like harmonically and sonically too. Just, I feel like Robert Glasper does that really well. And just like in certain cadences, the ways he moves chords just evoke like certain feelings. I've definitely like spent a lot of time just trying to like tap into that and different like chord progressions too. Not only just like lyrically, but just like sonically. Like, oh, how does this make the listener feel? So I try to like tap in a lot on that level on this album too, which I feel like makes it even more dense now. So yeah,
right. And especially considering that this is coming from, you know, like almost 5 years worth of time, you know, like this is like snippets of you from between 2019 and 2023, you know, like, yeah, you know like you said, like there are two songs on here that were made 4 months ago, 5 months ago.
Exactly.
You know, like it's difficult to put sounds together from over the, like, from such a, you know, like 4 years isn't that long of a time, but it's a long time. Yeah. You know, like putting stuff together over the course of 4 years and having it flow like you made it all in 2 weeks is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, it's definitely a task. It's definitely like, just like taking like little cloths and just sewing it together. I feel like that's kind of what I was trying to be on.
Damn. Well, like how did you feel, or talk to me about when it was finished. I mean, like, I feel like you still might even be working on it a little bit, but like,
bro,
when
it was, I'm always working, just changing and perfecting. But yeah, when it was finished, it was definitely just like, dang, like this just happened. It just took a second to just like listen all the way through. And yeah, it was. I always compare like dropping or like finishing a project to like giving birth without any of the pain of giving birth. without any of the physical pain, there could be like some emotional pain, you know, but
oh, for sure, yeah.
It's just like literally you're slaving away at this, at creating and developing this art for months and months or years. And then like once you drop it, it's still yours technically. But it's like now it's just for the listener. And I feel like it's just like a crazy feeling, just like dropping, especially just like a larger scale project. But yeah, you know, I'm hyped though. I'm very excited.
Yeah, no, as you should be, you know, like it's like, you know, you really do, you know, like you're giving that to the world and, you know, like people are going to interpret it however they interpret it. And that's a beautiful thing and a scary thing. But, you know, thanks. Like, you know, just because we're on the subject, are you the type of person who likes to have like a very, not so much rigid, but just like a structured way of like, this is how you should take this in? Or do you just kind of like put it out and it's like, what do you think of this? Do you prefer one or the other, or do you not care?
Dang, I don't really care. I'm kind of like easygoing. Like, I'll just give it out and see what happens. That's kind of like my vibe. Just like right. Go with the flow. But yeah, I guess it could depend just on like what I'm dropping, or maybe what the song or whatever I'm dropping means to me. And I'll be more like specific on how I want it to be received. But usually I'm just like, you know, if I mess with it, Winston Marsalis said that too in like an interview. Someone asked him, which is more important, the listener or the creator of the music? Then he was like, the creator is the first listener. And that's literally all he said. And I was like, oh, that is actually really facts. So yeah. I feel like as long as I mess with it, that's all that matters.
Right. That's deep without trying too hard to be deep.
Yeah.
And I love that. You know, just like,
yeah. It's like mad profound, just in the chillest way. But yeah.
Yeah. You know, like stuff, you know, like stuff like that is the stuff that really lands and connects. Like just I had my OG Dar Adams on here a couple weeks ago. And when we ended the episode, he said something that like I've really been thinking about for the last like 2 weeks. He said like the only things that don't grow are dead, you know, like stuff Ooh. Like that. I'm just like he said that. And I had a physical reaction when he said it.
Yeah.
Like, and I haven't stopped thinking about that. It's like so simple insane. And it's not like labored or anything. It's just like, damn, like it just felt just like,
yeah, that's a quote. That's insane.
Like, yeah like I love little earworms like that, that, you know, like I'm sure. And like those only come from like experience, and just like they'll just be a thing you think. It's not one of those things that you're gonna like labor over for 20 minutes to try like figure out this cool thing to say. I don't know, it's just like a thing that just comes so naturally, and I could tell by the way he said it that it just came so naturally, like damn.
Oh, for sure.
And yeah. Like, man, and like, you know, the whole like jazz and rap have been intertwined together since rap first began, you know. Mm-hmm. Like it's always been there, but I don't often get the chance to talk to someone who kind of comes at it from, I mean, like I know you like grew up listening to rap, but like you grew up like playing, you know, like you grew up playing jazz and like being very well versed in it, like through your family. You know, like I'm thinking, I already said it before, but you know, like even just like comparing things between like The Pursuit Of and your first album, just sounding so much like straight ahead beat music made by putting jazz elements together, and More Better featuring more just like straight jazz. Like I love that dichotomy, and I love the parallels between those two things, and just like taking the opportunity to show how they come together, but show like how they're also like these two separate entities.
Yeah, separate
that
things.
Inform the whole, you know, like as someone who grew up listening to and playing both jazz and rap music, what do you feel makes them so complementary to each other? You know, like what,
I feel like, It just all comes from the same place. Like, I definitely have thought about that before. Like, I feel like the same thing that I feel when I'm like, I'm listening to like Playboi Carti is the same thing I feel when I'm listening to like A Love Supreme by John Coltrane. I feel like it's a very similar thing that comes from a lot of just like rage and a lot of just like release. And I think it's just like, it's so similar, even though it's just like sonically sounds different. It's just literally all just like the Black experience and just like Black American music too. So I feel like, oh, let me just like interweave a lot of that. And same thing with gospel music, like shout music and the density and of when someone's just like praising. That's all literally like, if you think about it, it's just the same exact feeling. Cause I've been in like, I've been in crazy moshes. I've been in like church. I grew up in church. So, and just like playing in the most intense, like tipping jazz club. I feel like it's just all very similar feelings eternally. So it's in a way, even though it's kind of challenging, it's very, it makes sense to merge these sounds together because it's coming from the same place.
Right. And man, I didn't even touch on the gospel aspect because there's because there's definitely quite a bit of gospel in there. Mm-hmm. Like did you play in church growing up or did you just go?
Yeah, I played in church. Both of my parents, my dad is like the director of music. He still is at a couple of churches in Brooklyn.
Oh, wow.
And led the choir. And my mom led like the youth choir and stuff. In church. And my parents met in church too, which is kind of crazy. My dad was teaching the choir. My mom was singing in the choir, which is mad cool. But yeah, it was just a lot of just like, I was in church like 4 out of the 7 days of the week, basically 4 or 5 days. So it's a lot of, you know, that plays a big part in just musicality. And also just the whole theme of just like music being more than just notes and harmony, just like meaning something and standing for something, just more, and just like using music as a vessel to be like, you know, there's something bigger than myself. Right. I feel like that played an important part, just like growing up being like, oh yeah, music can like help people. It could also just be like lit. We could just be turning up.
Yeah, like, you know
it plays a lot of roles, which I feel like is really cool. But yeah, it's definitely, I feel like what church helped in the grand scheme of things, just like meaning in general.
Right. Yeah. Nah, I get it. Cause I went to church until I was probably about 10 or 11 years old. And then I stopped. My parents actually gave me the option to keep going or stop if I wanted to, and I was like, I'm not really feeling but the whole time I was there, I always really loved, I mean, like, I still love gospel music to this day. It's like, and you're like, it's just like you said, it's just all about the feeling of it, you know, like it's just all, yeah, it's just like all about the feeling that comes from, you know, like I don't even think about the religious aspect of it anymore. It just sounds gorgeous. And it's like really like facilitating that feeling and musicality. And like, there are so many people I know who came up in the church and that's how they started singing or that's how they started playing piano. That's, you know, like that's like, you know, like that's like undeniable, you know? Mm-hmm. And I guess before I ask you my very last question here, like considering the fact that like your music is such a mix of like rap, jazz, gospel, like how would you describe the music that you make? You know, like I feel like there's so much in there. Like how would you describe what you do?
That's such a good question. I feel like I literally always just say it's just Black music. Like I just make Black music. I just make Black American music, which is soul, R&B, hip hop, jazz, gospel. Even like rock, because you know we made rock too, you know.
Yeah, we did.
And I started like delving into that more in this album too, because I never really made anything that was more alternative, like indie type stuff. So hear a little bit more of that too. But yeah, I feel like it's just Black music, just Black American music.
I love that, because like you like you're not wrong at all. And I mean, like now that you brought it up, like what like I'm trying to think back on some of the songs, but like talk to me about kind of putting that like harder rock or like alternative spin on it. Yeah. And like what like which songs in particular do you feel like it's strongest on?
Yeah, I feel like definitely one of the first singles, All the Same, It's just more like grooving, like alternative. And that all started because just like I started just listening to so much like Dijon and like Gene Dawson, and just like cool black alternative artists. I don't know if you know like Hello Yellow. They're also really sick.
I do know Hello Yellow. Yeah,
they're so fly. So I was just like bumping a lot of their music, and I was just like, "Dang, I'm really trying to just incorporate just different stuff. As long as it just feels good, I feel like I should get it in there." But yeah, all the same. And then there's a song called Changes with my homie Laura. That's definitely very much on some like Phoebe Bridgers, like sad, but just like in your like sad boy type music. But that's one of my favorite songs that I've literally like ever written. Because it's definitely just like very indie, but still I feel like it's staying true to just like harmonically the type of music that I make. I feel like those two for sure, just like pushing more on that side of the genres.
Right. And yeah, just like once again, like that mixture is just what makes this project so interesting. And so I'm like it feels so warm too. Like I feel like that's such a never mind. It's warm. It sounds nice. Yes. It sounds like spring and summer music. You know, like I'm really excited to really like dig into it as it starts to get warmer and like it's like consistent, like, you know, it's just like stuff like that. And like not to go too off track, but like I remember when the first No Worries album came out, and it came out in like October or November. And I was so mad that it didn't come out in the summer, because I was like, I'm not trying to listen to this when it's like 31 degrees outside. I want to hear this when it's like 82. I'm in like a nice button down in a park, sipping on some mango lemonade. Like that's what that sounds like to me. And that's what this sounds like to me.
Hey,
you know,
let's
like this sounds, you know, this sounds like being like posted up on like a lamppost with like a CNC. type music for me, you know, that's like hard. that's I like that about this.
Right. Yo, thanks. Yeah, it's definitely meant to be just like feel good music, especially just like spring, summer, you know.
To wrap this up, Cisco Swank, if your life was a movie, what would it be about?
Ooh. If my life was a movie, it would just be about getting through the trials and tribulations of life, but chilling with the homies. I feel like that's the whole thing. It would just be like a whole lot going on, which as long as you got the homies and the family, it's gonna be all right. And just a lot of shenanigans. The movie's just gonna have so many random shenanigans. But a great ending. It's gonna have a mad, corny, great ending, where we all like jump in the air with like our fists up and paw in the screen.
It's Frozen, yeah.
I feel like that's gonna be the movie. But then it's gonna have like a scene with like a bad guy comes back, and then it's gonna end like, ah, I came back, and it's gonna be like, ah, sequel.
So it'd be like Kids, but a lot less intense.
Yes, literally. Yeah, that's what it's gonna be on for sure.
Damn, that's, sorry, I'm chewing.
Cisco, but, so, oh no, you're chilling.
Yo, yeah, nah, like that's like we all need a little corniness in our lives sometimes,
you know.
It's like unavoidable, you know. Yeah, it's fine, you know, like, you're like nine times out of ten that just means you're being pure to yourself and true to yourself.
That's,
like,
for sure.
Fuck it. Bro, thank you so much. Like, this was great.
Yeah, this is mad fun. This is sick. Thanks for having me.
Nah, man, it's my pleasure. You know, like I feel like I say this a lot, but you know, like that, you know, like the intersection of these two different things really brings so many dimensions out of this music. And like every conversation I have with people about their interests really tells me more about them and about the art they make. And you know, like, you know, it's like considering that your music is like, you know, like five or six different kinds kind of rolled together under one, you know, like very beautiful black umbrella. Like you just felt like a perfect fit, you know, like, and I just, yeah, you know, like I, you know, like you're, you know, like you're a real solid dude who makes dope music. And I just appreciate your time, you know, like it means a lot.
Appreciate you. This is sick. You know, I'm just happy to be here creating cool stuff with the homies. Just trying to make interesting music. I feel like that's the goal.
Right.
Yeah. You know, one day at a time. It's all you can do.
Son, one day at a time, every time. Like
literally.
Thanks for listening. Shout out to y'all for making it this far. And shout out to all the black people listening too, because y'all really impeccable. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and tell a friend to come through next time.